following message is from New Life Gillette series, All In. This week, Pastor Mike brings us part three of this series.
Good morning. Oh, it is a good day to be with you. I looked at the 10-day forecast, and I saw some 60s in there coming up. Yes, spring. We may get one this year, I think. We'll see. I'm very excited. March Madness, right around the corner. Jayhawks are number one. Good things are happening. Yesterday, we had 24 hours of prayer, and there were over 80 people who came, and together we spent 24 hours, for an entire 24 hours, we were praying for our church and what God is doing in our community. And I don't, if you didn't get a chance to come out yesterday, next time we have a 24 hours of prayer, I'd say do it, because it was phenomenally rewarding, even for those of us who got to participate in it. It was awesome. Okay, I got a question for you. Have you ever heard of a smoke jumper? Raise your hand. Okay, about a fifth of you, something like that. Smoke jumper. I had never heard of these before until I read about them in a book last month. A smoke jumper is a firefighter. And so when there's a fire out in the wilderness or in a forest or something, they will fly out there and they will skydive down into the forest to fight the fire. They call them smoke jumpers because they're kind of jumping in blind through smoke to go fight a fire. But they don't fight with hoses and water. They fight with axes and chainsaws. And so they'll chop down trees and they'll create a barrier so that the fire can't move any farther. And so there's some really amazing stories about some fires that have been fought in this way in the past. I read about one from 1949 in Man Gulch, Montana. And in 1949, in Man Gulch, Montana, 15 smoke jumpers jump and land in a fire. And they start running down the mountain toward the fire. But what they don't know is that when they land, the fire has what they call a blow up or an explosion. And the fire, because of the wind and the because of the circumstances, the fire starts moving rapidly up the mountain. In fact, when they landed, the fire was moving at 11 feet per second up the mountain. You're not stopping that with chainsaws. So they're running down this mountain, and when they realize that this explosion of burning has happened, their foreman, a guy named Wagner Dodge, I don't know if there is a go-to fireman name, but if you've got the name Wagner Dodge, you have to be a firefighter, because that's just cool. And so Wagner Dodge shouts to his firemen, "Drop your tools and run up the mountain. Run. You've got no other choice, right? When the fire is moving that fast, even without carrying tools, you're going to have a hard time outrunning it. So drop your tools and run." That day, 13 of the 15 firefighters were killed. Can you guess how two survived? They are the only two who obeyed the command to drop their tools. Everybody else thought to themselves, "I can do it while carrying my chainsaw. I can make it up the mountain. I can outrun this fire while carrying my tools." They could not bring themselves to drop these tools. And why? Well, these tools are valuable to them. They have become accustomed to relying on these tools, not just to get their job done, but for to stay alive, right? But at some point, you reach the realization that if I hold on to these tools, I will die. A very similar thing happened in 1994 in King Mountain, Colorado, in a fire called the South Canyon Fire. And this time, 17 firefighters jump in to fight the fire. And an explosion happens, a blow up happens. The fire starts moving rapidly towards them, and the foreman yells, "Drop your tools and run." That day, 15 of the 17 firefighters were killed. Can you guess what the two who survived did that the other ones did not? They are the only ones who dropped their tools when they were commanded to do so. So you start asking yourself, what is it about their tools that made it so hard for them to drop them. And these are not just two anomalies. In the 1990s alone, there were 27 firefighters who died because they refused to drop their tools when they were commanded to do so. One of the men who survived the South Canyon fire was a guy named Quentin Rhodes. Quentin Rhodes recounts how it was so hard for him to drop his tools. In fact, he says that he ran up the mountain for 900 feet before he finally decided, okay, fine, I'll drop my chainsaw. And he said, even then, when I decided to put it down, he said, even then, I started looking for a safe place to put it down. Why? Why were you... The fire's coming. If you die, the tool also dies, right? And a safe place is not a safe place if the fire is coming. He's watching his friends be burned alive, and he's still clinging to his chainsaw. You are Quentin Rhodes. I am Quentin Rhodes. We have become dependent on things in our lives, and they are taking our lives from us, and we are still clinging to them because we can't let them go. They're too precious to us. So here's the question. What am I holding on to that I need to let go of? That sentence ends with a preposition, so I think it's incorrect, but whatever. What am I holding on to that I need to let go of? There is a wall of fire rushing to me, and the only way that I will escape is to drop something, to lighten the load. So I have to ask myself, am I holding on to anything? Am I holding on to anger or fear or doubt that is keeping me from running after God with all of my heart? Am I running after God wholeheartedly? Paul Tillich says, the strange work of love is to destroy. You don't think of love as destroying, but the only way you can fully love is to destroy what is against love. To remove everything, to drop everything, to destroy everything that is keeping me from wholly giving myself in love. So if you plan to pick up love, you're going to have to drop some things like selfishness. You're going to have to drop greed and gluttony and hatred, anger, jealousy, pride, and everything else that is making you hold too tightly onto your own life, onto your own success, onto your own comfort. My freshman year of college, I was a business major. I grew up in a home with a father who was a pastor, and I was not really a big fan of everything that my father gave up for his faith. It drove me nuts that I grew up in such a poor home, and we had to do all the things that my friends didn't have to do, and we couldn't do the things my friends wanted to do. I was like, I don't want to do the pastor thing. That's too much of a sacrifice. I'm going to become a business major. And so I go to become a business major, and I'm about halfway through my freshman year of college. God starts working on me, and he starts telling me that I need to give myself more fully to this Christian mission that I say I believe in. One of the stories that really impacted me a lot was the story of a girl named Cassie Bernal. You've probably heard the story of Cassie Bernal. In 1999, Columbine High School shooting happens. And these very hateful young men who are not big fans of Christians go through the school shooting people. And they come to Cassie Bernal as she's watching her friends be murdered. She fully is aware that they hate Christians. And they hold a gun to her head. And they ask Cassie, are you a Christian? In this moment, she's faced with a question. Am I holding on to anything more tightly than I'm holding on to my faith in God? And she says, yes, I am. pull the trigger, and Cassie is killed. Are you a Christian? I ask myself, if I were put in that same place, how would I respond? Because all you got to do is say no, right? That's simple enough. So what would I be holding on to more tightly than I'm holding on to my faith in God? I think the single most convincing proof that Jesus was who he said he was is that there are people that went to their deathbed because they refused to deny that they saw him alive after they saw him killed. His followers, there was a gun held to their head, metaphorically. And they were asked, just say you didn't see him raised from the dead. Just deny it and you'll be fine. Can't do that because I have wholly given myself to following him. And in response to these questions, I have to ask myself, am I holding on to anything more tightly than I am holding on to Jesus? Am I truly, wholly all in? What am I willing to do for my faith to be a part of this Christian mission? There's a story that Jesus told that kind of makes us think through this question. It's one of Jesus's made-up stories that he made up in order to get you to think about something. In other words, every part of the story has a purpose. It's supposed to teach you a lesson. We read this story in Matthew chapter 25, and he says, the kingdom will be, in other words, later he would say, the kingdom is near. It's coming close. In other words, he's pointing to his death again. It's right around the corner. The kingdom is near. Later we would be told the kingdom is here. The kingdom will be like a man going on a journey. So he's illustrating the kingdom. He's doing the simile metaphor thing. And he's going to tell a story to describe to us what the kingdom is like. So apparently Belinda Carlisle was right. Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. It's here. It's now. This is the kingdom. We are a part of it. We are participating in this kingdom that Jesus is about to describe to us. And in this kingdom, there is a king, a ruler, and his name is Jesus. And so this ruler goes off on a journey. He says, the kingdom will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants. In the story, this is us. He calls his servants and entrusted his wealth. This entrusted word is important. Entrusted his wealth to them. So, the master gives some servants something that they don't deserve. Now, the wealth wasn't theirs, the money wasn't theirs, but they got the gift of the opportunity. The opportunity was there. That was the gift. So they didn't own the money, but they owned the opportunity. And so the master is giving them a test. And the test is to see what they would do with this gifted opportunity. This is the same true for us. What we have isn't ours. God gifted us the opportunity to do something with it, to invest it, to grow it. So what will we do with what God has given us, what God has, the opportunity that God has entrusted to us? And what we do with that gift determines what happens with it when we're done with it. Will we get more of it? Or will what we have be removed from us? If we are faithful with it, we will get more. But if we are defensive of it, if we are protective of it, and we do nothing productive with it, then we will lose it, is what Jesus is about to tell us. To one of the servants, he gave 5 bags of gold. To another, 2 bags. And to another, 1 bag each. So this is a frustrating part of this sermon, because we like fairness. We would appreciate it if he would have just given 3 to all of them, right? That would have been nice. Somebody did. Each, how did he decide who gets what? According to his ability. Why were their gifts different sizes? According to their ability to manage them. And there is a whole sermon here that I could preach about jealousy and fairness, and I could tell a joke about how I hate skinny people and all that stuff, but I don't have time for that. So we just need to kind of accept that these people were all given something that they didn't deserve, whether it was 1 or 5. They didn't have it before, now it's a gift. Then the master went on a journey, and the man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once, don't delay, he went at once and put his money to work and gained. Put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. In other words, this guy had some skills. He had some talent. He had some opportunity, and he had to put some effort into it. He had to get his hands dirty. He had to take a risk. He put it to work, and he earned 5 more bags. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. He also put it to work. But the man who had received 1 bag. Now, in the beginning of the story, we think the man who had received 1 bag is kind of like he's the underdog that you're cheering for. But now we're going to start to kind of hear him talked about in a different way. The man who has 1 bag has now become almost the villain of the story. The man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground. He looked for a safe place to put it down. He was defensive of it. He was protective of it. He cherished it. He never had this much money for it before, so he's going to do whatever he can to protect it so nobody can take it from him. And he found a safe place to put it down. He dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. And after a long time, this is not a day or two, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. Settled accounts. Asked, "What'd you do with what I gave you?" And notice that every one of them, all 3, no matter how much they were given, had to give an account. We were all given gifts of different size. But all of us will have to give an answer for what we did with what we were given. And the response, "I kept it safe," or "I didn't lose it," isn't good enough for God. The master is not okay with "I played it safe," or "I didn't lose it." The master expects more. The master expects us to grow it, to increase it. And the man who had received 5 bags of gold, the moment he had been waiting for, he had put all this work and all this time and all this effort into growing the money. And so the master comes home and he gets to celebrate and he runs to his master and he said, "Master, you gave me 5 bags of gold." He said, "You entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've gained 5 more." And his master replied, "Well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. Now you'll get more. Now I will put you in charge of many things." Because this is the test. Because all of us are given something, and sometimes the things that we're given aren't all that glamorous. Remember, the gift is an opportunity. Sometimes the gift comes in form of pain. And God's trying to figure out, can you handle this much? You show him, "God, I can handle this much." And he gives us even more. An opportunity of all kind comes our way, whether it's wealth or talent or people. And God wants to know, will you pass the test? What will you do with what I've given you? What God gives us is a test. And if we want more, we have to be faithful with what he gave to us. So that when we come to him and give a report of what we do with what we've been given, we get to hear these incredible words. "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Come and share your master's happiness." If we wonder why we're all so depressed and so anxious all the time, maybe it's because we're not doing with what he's given us, what he called us to do. Because to those people who are faithful with the gift, he says, "Now come and share in your master's happiness." So what did it take for the servant to share in his master's happiness? What did that require? It took hard work. It took effort. It took a risk. Do you want to share in your master's happiness? Are you all in for Jesus? Are you just filling time until it's over? Are you just taking it easy? Are you playing it safe? The man with 2 bags of gold also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. I doubled it. See, I've gained 2 more." And his master replied, he only gained two more. It's not as much, right? But he received the same reward. Well done, good and faithful servant. Good job. And these are the words that all of us so desperately in our lives want to hear. I'm an Enneagram 3. Anybody know what that means? It means that I live my life to impress people. It's not a good thing. It's just my temptation. My temptation is that I live my life to make people impressed with me or make people think that I'm some special deal or something. So when I hear words from somebody you respect, like my love language is words of affirmation. So when somebody I respect or somebody I follow says, well done, that gets me immediately emotional. And the idea of hearing my Heavenly Father, my Creator, the one who gave His life for me, when I think of the idea of Him saying, well done, I cannot imagine anything greater than that. Well done. So who am I trying to impress? The book of Revelations tells us that there is a book that God's keeping tabs on. And this book is called the Book of Life. And God in this book is writing down the names of everyone is His children. And I've also often wondered in my life, what does this book look like? What's in it? Because it could just be like an Excel spreadsheet, a bunch of names on it. That's a little boring. I don't think that's what it is. The Bible doesn't tell us. But if I imagine the Book of Life, I imagine that it is the coolest storybook in history. We talked earlier about Cassie and about the martyrs who have gone before us. I bet the book is the coolest story of the people who have gave their lives to Christ. It's not just so-and-so got into kingdom, good job. It's here is his story. Here is how he sacrificed his life. Here's how he gave to me. Here are the people who are here in heaven because of what he did. So I'm really not okay. And we don't know that that's what it is. But if that's what it is, I'm not okay with just Mike Wilson. He prayed a prayer and got in. Good job. Check mark. I'm not okay with that. I want there to be at least a sentence there about something that I did for my faith, with my faith. I want there to be a paragraph there about how I gave my life so that others could follow Christ. I want there to be a story about something cool that happened. Because this is really what we're all looking for in this life, right? Well done. You were faithful with a little, so I gave you more, and then I gave you more, and then I gave you more. And I want to hear the words, you have been faithful with a few things. Now I'll put you in charge of many things. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. So let's do something with the gift that we've been given. Let's experience what it's like to share in the master's happiness. And then, we take a turn in the story. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. See, master, it's really hard out there in this world. You remember how the master decided how many bags of gold they got? What determined it? Their ability. Their ability determined how much they got. In other words, this man was given one bag of gold because he had the ability to manage it. He had everything he needed to double the one bag of gold. It didn't necessarily, in this story, it could have been the five bagger dude that buried it, that played it safe, who was too scared. It could have been the five bagger. In this case, it was the one bagger dude who played it safe, who was too nervous, who didn't put in the work. He had everything he needed to double this money, but he wasted the gift. He says, Master, I was afraid. And I went out and hid your gold in the ground. Here it is. Now he's feeling pretty ashamed. He's just had the five bagger and the three or two bagger dude go before him and double, and they're all proud and excited, and there's a celebration happening and they're getting more, and he's like, I heard this story about a bank getting robbed, and I knew that if I put the bank, there's a chance it would get robbed, and then I wouldn't even earn any interest. I would have been in charge of losing your money, and that would have been terrible. I was scared. I made excuses. I found all the things that could go wrong, and I focused on those. And in a community like Gillette, this is a big temptation. In a community where our economy is up and down, we're so transient, people move and then move away. In a world where the coronavirus is all over the news, when our stock market is plummeting out of, not because anything happened, but because of fear. I mean, we live in a world that is controlled right now by fear. You don't know anybody who has the coronavirus. But I'm sitting here and I have a retirement saved up, and I've got a little app on my phone that tells me how much I have for retirement. And guess what? It's going away right now. So when I'm talking about not having fear, this is a very difficult Sunday to be talking about not having fear. Because the world is overwhelmed with fear right now. This is how we live. This is what we're experiencing. Is the economy going down? What's going to happen? Who's going to be elected? What? And God's like, I didn't ask you how many things are there to be afraid of. I ask you to do something with what I gave you. I ask you to invest it. I ask you to put in the hard work and grow it. Do something with it. When we called this initiative thing we're doing All In, I told a few people about it. And a lot of people, the first thing that came to their mind when I mentioned it was poker. I didn't expect that. It wasn't the first thing that came to my mind, but they're like, oh, are you talking about like pushing all your chips in? I'm like, well, no, but that kind of works too. If you've ever played poker or watched it on TV or anything, you know there's that moment where you got a good hand and you're thinking, how many chips should I put in? I got two pair. And you're like, but wait a minute. There are three spades out there. He could have two spades. He could have the flush. I'll just put in a little bit. And then everybody shows your cards. And you're like, I won. Yeah. Why didn't I go all in? I could have had so much more. Why didn't I go all in? What was I afraid of? I'm not asking you to gamble anything. Let me tell you something. I know how the end of the story happens and we win. When we talk about faith, we're not just talking about blindly gambling things away. We talk about having faith because we believe that the one we put our hope in has some things under control, that he's got a plan, that he holds all things in his hands. And my guess is that when the one bagger servant gives the one bag back to the master, he had that same kind of, why didn't I go all in feeling? Why did I play it easy? Why did I play it safe? Why didn't I go all in? And this is the moment, because Jesus is telling this story, and you've seen the way Jesus interacts with people who screw up. Like the adulterer comes, and Jesus is like, oh, don't worry about it. Everybody else is worse than you. And he's like protecting adulterers or the murderer or the whatever. He's like protecting tax collectors. So you assume that Jesus is telling the story about this guy who didn't grow the bag, but he didn't lose the bag. And you assume Jesus is going to be really kind and nice to him, right? This is what Jesus says to the one bagger. He says, you wicked, lazy servant. Whoa, Jesus. That's a little too much. Like you could just tell him, do better next time. And he takes all of the bag from the one bagger servant and gives it to the five bagger. You lose it all. When Jesus returns and he asks us what we did with what he gave us, are we going to kind of have to just come say, I played it safe. I didn't lose it. I even did the Dave Ramsey thing and I paid down debt and I played it safe. Or are we going to get to stand before the master like the five bagger dude and get to say, look what I did with what you gave me. Like, I didn't play it safe. I went all in for you, God. I did everything I could and it hurt a lot. There were times when I felt a lot of pain, but it was so worth it. And you kept getting more and I just kept doing more and you kept giving me more and I kept doing more and we've been in this thing together, God, and now here I am, I've doubled it. Well done, you good and faithful servant. Or will the words wicked and lazy come up in that conversation? I don't know about you, but I'm not really doing this Christian faith thing so that I can then at the end of it be called wicked and lazy. Because here's the reality. New Life has been given five bags. God entrusted us with five bags. Whether we like it or not, whether it's comfortable or not, whether it's annoying that the lobby's full or not, here's the reality. God gave us five bags and they're below me right now. They're singing and learning and they're a lot shorter than we are. And they're everywhere. Last Sunday, we had almost 250 kids in Kid Zone. Like, that is a crazy number. Almost 250 kids downstairs, and they're just more keep coming. You guys keep having babies, and we're just like, where do we put these people? And God's like, I gave them to you. What are you going to do with them now? That's an opportunity. That's a gift. What will you do with it? Will you squander it or will you invest it? Will you grow them? Because I'm not really a big fan of the idea of putting all this work and effort into my kids and then someday they just turning their back on it and saying, forget about that faith stuff. I'm going to go live a nice, easy life. I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with standing before God even a few years from now and just saying, I know you entrusted all those kids to us, but we just kind of, we played it safe. The economy and the coronavirus and all that stuff, we played it safe. I'm not okay with that. We have to have a better answer than that. So the question is, will you join us? Next Sunday, we are going to come and we are going to do something that's going to hurt. And we're going to make 3-year commitments. Darcy and I have been praying about the number and it's a scary thing. We're going to make 3-year commitments to give financially to All In. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a party. Next Sunday, seriously, is going to be a blast. We're doing some skits and some other things. You'll like it, and I hope you'll join us. But here's my fear. There was a lady named Kitty Genovese in 1964 in Queens, New York, who was mugged. Who was stabbed to death right outside of her apartment complex, which doesn't seem like that strange of a story until you hear that there were 38 people watching while she was stabbed to death and nobody did anything. Nobody called the cops. And so the cops were looking into this afterwards and they're like, why did nobody do anything? These are normal people. Why didn't anybody do anything to help this woman? And so they started asking the onlookers, and the onlookers all had a similar response. They said something like, I assumed someone else would do something about it. See, if there were only a few onlookers, somebody would have at least called the cops. Somebody would have done something. But everybody's thinking, there's enough people here. They got it, I'm sure. The cops later would start calling this the bystander effect. And it's this idea that if there's a lot of people around, you start to think that you have less and less responsibility. And the reason why churches of our size sometimes have a hard time pulling off projects like this is because there's a lot of us in the room who are just kind of thinking, well, they got more money than I do, and they've been a Christian longer than I have, and all this other stuff, and we start to make excuses for why we aren't going to step up. But the reason why we called this thing All In is because we recognize that it's going to take all of us. Now, here's the danger in this. there's somebody in the room who's visiting us for the first time. And the reason why I'm not a big fan of preaching messages like this is because we usually start to try to make those people feel welcome home. You don't, we do not mean to pressure you to make a 3-year commitment to give to All In if you are visiting with us today. But to those of you who are new lifers, it's easy to start thinking everybody else can kind of carry this, but this is a bigger weight than any of us can carry. It's not going to be one person writing a big check. This is going to be all of us pitching in to make this happen. Otherwise, we run the danger of just starting to think somebody else will give. So we need everybody to pray about fully giving themselves to this project. Because God may not have called you to be a pastor, and when you were a freshman in college, he didn't make you change your major. God may not have called you to be a missionary to Africa. And maybe sometimes you feel guilty about that. And you start thinking, maybe I should have done more, should have gone with a different career or something. But maybe God brought you to this place so that this could be how you get fully give yourself. Maybe he wanted you to make a little bit of money so that you could fully give yourself to the Christian mission in this way. God, today I thank you for you, how you have been faithful in our lives to give us what we did not deserve. I thank you for the people in this room who have so faithfully given themselves over to you. They're holding nothing back. There is nothing that they are carrying that is keeping them from fully running after you with all of their hearts. Help us to follow in their footsteps to become more like you. We love you and thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for tuning in to New Life Gillette. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newlifegillette.com. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And always remember, Jesus loves you very much, and he died to give you new life.